Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hello there, folks. My name is Lynn. I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. And once again, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Bobby Neer, Ken, and Robert. Today's episode up for discussion is called The Howling Man. And I'll turn it over to Robert now for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Down this hall is a very strange individual locked in a room. He's known by various names and by various forms. In the Twilight Zone, you'll be close to the elbow of the people who let him out. Our story is called The Howling Man by Mr. Charles Beaumont. It's designed for the young in heart but the strong of nerve. The Howling Man. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Robert. And before I begin, I want to welcome Rick Wall and guest number 2 and guest number 3, guest number 4, and guest number 5. Thanks, everyone, for being here today. The Howling Man is about a traveler named David Ellington who becomes lost on a dark, stormy night, and he looks for shelter at a monastery. When David walks into the monastery, he's shocked to hear a loud, wolf-like howling. The monks brush it off by saying it's only the wind. They then refuse to grant David's request for shelter and food, but when he passes out from exhaustion, they have no choice but to put him to bed. When he wakes up, he hears the howling again, and he tracks it to a man whom the monks have imprisoned in a cell. The man tries to convince David that the monks are stark, raving mad and have imprisoned him merely for kissing his woman in public. Now, David finds the story unbelievable at first, but when the head monk, Brother Jerome, catches the two men talking, he takes David into his office and tells him he's well enough to leave and must do so at once. Well, David asks about the man who's imprisoned, and Brother Jerome adamantly tells him more than once that it's no man that he sees in the cell. Well, when David threatens to go to the police about the monks imprisoning a man without authority to do so, Brother Jerome decides to tell him the truth about how the man in the cell is the devil and how he spent many, many years trying to capture him. After a while, David assures Brother Jerome that he believes him, but he really doesn't because he escapes from his room during the night and goes to the cell. The prisoner is happy to see him and tells him to simply lift the bar in front of the cell and let him out. Well, David can't believe he hasn't lifted the bar and let himself out, because he easily could have done that. But the man keeps rushing David to let him out. You know, hurry, we have no time, let me out. Well, one of the monks is yelling for him not to do it, but it's too late. And once the cell is open, the man causes David to collapse onto the floor, and then he quickly walks through the monastery, changing his appearance more and more into that of the devil's with every step he takes until he has completely changed into Satan himself, complete with horns on his head and everything. He waves his cape and disappears into a cloud of smoke. Brother Jerome kneels down next to David and tells him that he feels sorry for him because of what he's let loose upon the world. This episode actually starts with David in his home telling the story to someone. It then ends with him finishing the story. He was telling it to his maid. David managed to recapture the devil and has him imprisoned in a room of his house. He tells his maid that he's going to return him to Brother Jerome and warns her never, ever to open that door, no matter how much howling she hears from the man. Well, needless to say, you see her opening the door as soon as David leaves the house. This is one of the best Twilight Zone episodes ever made. It does have a few flaws, but it's still an excellent story. I couldn't believe that David didn't stop and say, wait a minute, this guy could have let himself out of the cell any time he wanted to during the past 5 years. This doesn't seem right. But, of course, I don't see how anyone can actually imprison the devil. I especially want to know how David Ellington managed to recapture him, how he locked him in a room and kept him there. I can't imagine how anyone can do that with Satan, but they had to do it in order to have a story here. And I'm glad the story was written because it's dark, gloomy, and it has just the right amount of chill and fear factors that a Twilight Zone episode needs. I love the special effects during the metamorphosis from man into devil. I thought that was very well done. And the guy had me convinced he was the devil. You know, overall, it's not quite a classic, but it's definitely excellent. And it's one of my favorites. So it gets a 4 for me on a scale of 1 to 5. And now I am going to turn this over to Robert for his thoughts.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. I just wanted to say happy holidays, as Guest 5 said, to everybody. I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Us over here in the United States to celebrate it, and with Christmas and New Year's coming up. So thank you for tuning in to listen to our show today.
To everyone else, too. Happy holidays to everyone else.
Yep, you too.
I just wanted to say, I think we're all going to be pretty much in agreement, a majority of us are, because the thing with Twilight Zone, especially as with the first season, second season, it gets its ups and downs, depending on what stories we review, and this is one of them stories that really has an upside to it. You know, when watching this episode, starts out flashback of a story in a man's life, like Lynn said. It almost felt like a chapter from a book with dark and stormy night type setup. And this one lone stranger who found himself lost among the mountains to find a light in the monastery. Was this a coincidence or did he have a purpose? David, when entering the monastery, he, as Lynn said, asked for help because he was lost and sick. One of the brothers takes David to meet Brother Jerome, who's played wonderfully by John Carradine in what I would say his Moses-like outfit, along with staff in hand. He was, you know, ready to put him back out in the rain until he heard the story. And it just shows in this that he believed the prisoner more than what he heard from Brother Jerome when he was telling him the story. You know, it was interesting that he didn't wait till the weather cleared to try to go down to the police to kind of report it, which I think was the intention, but things didn't turn out that way. What I thought was a great scene in this episode was when the devil was once released, he walks down the corridor and turns into the devil bit by bit as he changes into his persona. And, of course, we always were told how the devil can take form, or pleasant form, to people, so to say. And then it turns into a quest for David to capture the devil after that. It was almost a classic. I did have some minor flaws with it. This should have been fleshed out a little bit more. Actually, this probably would have been an ideal one for season 4 when Twilight Zone went to the hour format for that season. It had a feel and a style of an old horror movie. And I would have really loved to learn more of the background of David's character and the forming of the Brotherhood itself. You know, was the Brotherhood formed by belief of God, or was its sole purpose was to catch the devil? You know, we seem to look a lot into how we believe, you know, reading the Bible and, you know, God. And books and films, TV, we always get a lot of references to the devil and Satan and what he can do. As a few examples, I have my first one, which is a series that ran for a couple of years called Brimstone. And here that is now.
I was a cop. And my wife was raped. I caught the guy who did it, and I killed him. 2 months later, I died. I went to hell. 113 of the most vile creatures escaped.
They think they'll beat the devil. Nobody beats me.
How am I supposed to send them back?
The eyes, windows to the soul.
Destroy the eyes and the damned get a one-way ticket back home to hell.
But it's not hell you should be scared of. It's losing your second chance at life on earth.
Time to give the devil his due.
Why didn't you pull the trigger?
You're afraid of her, aren't you?
You have no idea how dangerous she is.
Why was she running around playing cop all this time?
Same reason you are, to track down all the damned souls. Only in her case, it's to get rid of the competition, the ones who don't want to play on her team. You think you've stopped her from burning any more houses of God? Don't fool yourself. She'll be back. I know her.
She was the ringleader, wasn't she? The brains behind the breakout.
What do you think? And you? You fool. You've fallen in love with her, haven't you? That's why she's so dangerous. So powerful. Power over the heart. The strongest weapon of all.
That's how she got away from you.
Don't be a fool. The only thing I ever loved was God. And that was a long time ago.
As said in the opening, Ezekiel's Zone was played by Peter Horton, who was a New York police cop detective whose wife was killed. He tracks down the murderer, kills him, but his sin was he enjoyed the killing, and because of that, he went to hell. Then he was brought back by the devil to trace down these 113 souls. And the thing was with him, he would have tattoos on his body, and as he captures the souls, the tattoos would disappear. John Glover played an excellent devil in the series, which barely lasted, I think, maybe half a season. It wasn't very long.
Wow.
It was good. I really did enjoy it. I think like 9 episodes or something like that. But another one, too, if people may remember, a recent one was called Reaper.
It began like any other day. He has every reason to feel hopeful.
I'm going to hand you like a sorority for time at Shindig.
Ask Danielle. She's smart. She's hot. She goes to college. She works at a crap shack like this with losers like me and you. What does that tell you? Just off the top of your head.
She's got low standards?
Exactly.
Then things got strange.
Oh! What? Did anybody see that? Somebody say something? Yeah. Sam Oliver, you're my hero.
Saved my life, you know that.
I didn't touch it. What do you mean? It's like I moved it with my mind or something. Something is really... Man!
You were supposed to move that with your mind.
But nothing can prepare him for what comes next.
Name tag's crooked.
Is this the carjacking? Are you carjacking me?
It is. If it was an Escalade, maybe.
You can have the car.
Sam, I'm not a carjacker. I'm the devil.
There's something I have to tell you, and I probably should have told you this a long time ago. Your mom and I sold your soul to the devil.
My parents sold my soul to the devil.
You lucky.
What?
Well, nothing cool like that ever happens to me, man.
One slacker.
Do I have to go to hell now?
You're gonna work for me here. You're just gonna bring escaped souls back to hell. You know, like a bounty hunter.
That's cool.
Condemned.
There's your fugitive. Broke out of hell after 50 years for arson.
Oh, God, gag me.
Look at that fool. You captured him already?
You are living hell.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to be a stupid bounty hunter.
You will do it. Or I'll take your mother.
Well, then what do you want me to do? I mean, how am I supposed to capture?
This will help. A vessel handcrafted in the bowels of tradition by the iniquitous and the vile. Oh, I forgot. You got 600 on your SATs, didn't you?
That'll work. I'm pretty sure I went my path.
Great job with the arsonist. Who's the hero, huh?
Yeah.
You're the hero, man. Pat yourself on the back.
I have a present for you. For the next fugitive.
So I have to do this forever?
Well, I mean, technically not forever. You're done when you die, right? Huh? Yes, I know.
Reaper ran a couple of seasons on the CW. The devil in that one plays excellently by Ray Weiss. It was more of a comedy tilt on that one. And then the final one I got is Ghost Rider.
Johnny Blaze, no one has ever attempted such a distance before. 300 feet from field goal to field goal. What's going through your mind right now?
You look really good.
Story goes that the rider is the devil's bounty hunter, sent to hunt down anyone that escaped from hell. During the day, it'll be normal. But at night, the presence of evil. The rider takes over.
Thanks for the info. I feel much better knowing I'm the devil's bounty hunter.
They've seen you now. They'll be waiting for you.
You've come to start the war.
I've come to win the war.
This day has been coming since you made that deal.
Never stop.
Never stop, please.
You'd like to get off that motorcycle.
You can't.
You have no choice.
Could you tell us about the Good Samaritan?
He had this rat trapper. It was all flames and stuff. His face was a skull, and it was on fire.
On fire?
Like...
Oh, Ghost Rider. You have to leave now.
I'm not going anywhere.
He's here.
You need my help. Expect the last tonight.
Deal with my rider.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I feel like my skull's on fire, but I'm good.
Ghost Rider was a movie that came out in 2006, had Peter Fonda as the devil in that one. Now, you notice between the three examples, it's always the devil getting somebody else to do his dirty work. And it's, you know, Devil and Daniel Webster, Angel Heart, you know, you can name a bunch of books and movies out there that always focused on that certain situation. But my rating was
Devil and Daniel Webster was great.
Yeah, that is a good movie. I always especially loved the Walter Houston always played the devil, voiced played Scratch in the movie. So I'll go ahead and turn this over to Bobby. Sorry I took so long, Bobby, but some great interesting examples and a wonderful episode that this was as well.
Thank you, Robert. I can only say this about this particular episode. It's a good thing it had three things going for it. Those three things are the atmosphere, because it's more atmosphere than anything, the director, and, of course, John Carradine. Because the truth of the matter is, it's a pretty weak story, and it's full of holes. So let's take them one at a time. There are certain Twilight Zone episodes, this is certainly one of them, where atmosphere carries the day. And that's true here. I mean, it's dark, and it's creepy, and it's a very uneasy feeling just from what you see in front of you. Although I will say this, I think that it could be a little overdone. You know, it's just with the lightning and the rain and the thunder and all of that just kind of hit you over the head with it. You know, that kind of, it was a dark and stormy night thing, only goes so far. So I have a little bit of problem with that, but it manages to work. The other thing it has going for it is the director, who really knows how to stage this story. I mean, although it's nothing new, and it's been done in countless movies and TV shows over the years, especially shows that have to do with the occult or haunted houses or people coming back from the dead. The placement of the camera is everything. He takes the camera, and while the story is progressing, he tilts it to the side. One minute it's going one way, then it gradually goes the other way. Sometimes you're looking, you have to turn your head to even look at the screen. And that makes viewers very uneasy. So that adds to the atmosphere. You get a really creepy feeling when that kind of thing happens. So that adds to it as well. The other thing, of course, is John Carradine. I mean, all I can say is I wonder if when the writer wrote this story, he didn't have John Carradine in mind, because you've got to have somebody with that kind of voice and that kind of presence. In many ways, his character in the story is more scary than the devil is, and that carries the day. I think it's a magnificent performance, but it's the kind of thing that John Carradine was known for. As a matter of fact, during his career, he was known as many things, but he was known as the voice, and for good reason. I mean, you can see it in this episode that just speaking alone is enough right there. So I think those things actually carry the day. As for the story itself, there's a lot of holes in it, and it really, in order to enjoy it, I mean, I enjoyed it and I gave it a 4. But it's interesting that nobody really gives it a 5. Nobody can go the rest of the way. Even I went to IMDb.
Want to make a bet?
Oh well, I haven't heard from you yet. I don't know. But I went to IMDb, as I do recently for certain episodes, and the people who wrote reviews there, just about everybody raved about it with reservations. And to watch it requires a huge amount of suspension of disbelief. For one thing, the story wants to have it both ways. It wants to let us know through Brother Jerome that the devil is the worst person in the world, and that he's caused nothing but trouble, as we all know, and that you need to capture him and get him out of our lives. Okay, I can buy into that. That's fine. But then you put him in a cell, and I'm supposed to believe that he can't possibly get out of there on his own. That only that staff across the door is going to keep him in there. And when he's asked about that by the lead character, then he says to him, "Oh, it's the staff of truth." Well, you know what? I mean, the devil's not going to be worried about truth or anything else. He should be able to get out of there. Of course, if you write the story, you can't have him get out in order to progress the story. But you have to believe that he can have it both ways. He's either all-powerful within his own realm of being able to cause trouble, or he's not. The other thing is that who says that you could possibly capture the devil as a living entity in front of you? That's like saying that you could put the devil in a room somewhere. It's like saying you could put God in a room somewhere. It's not quite that simple. Then the other things that everybody mentioned in their reviews is the fact that I said to Lynn earlier today before the show began that I can't understand why you would capture the devil and put him in a cell that has an opening in the front of the door where he could make his presence known. He could reach through the bars there. He could start howling and make a lot of trouble because you got the devil in the room. So I personally put him behind concrete. You know, you put him in a room where he can't get any, he can't see anything. You have to block him off entirely. You don't want to give him any opportunity to talk to anybody or to say, you know, this is not true. They got me in there for no reason. That's trouble right there. So I think the monks were very stupid in allowing him that kind of access. So that was a mistake right there. But it is a very, very creepy story. I also wondered why, when he's finally let out, right before he turns back into the devil, and Ellington lets him out of the cell, he simply points at him to put him on the floor to stop him right there. He could have killed him right then and there. I mean, the devil certainly doesn't care about that. He should have be done with him right at that point, and then obviously he couldn't have come back later on to capture him. So, you know, it's an all or nothing at all proposition with me. This is the devil. He's got to be really powerful to have caused the kind of troubles that he's caused throughout history. Now, earlier in the episode also, when Brother Jerome is questioned about, well, you know, if you captured him, how come there are still problems in the world? Why aren't we living in utopia? And he says to him, well, because a lot of the problems are man's own invention. We're our own worst enemy. Well, there's a lot of truth in that, too. But again, I was a little curious about why Ellington did not notice, seemed surprised by all this. Didn't he wonder why the world was a better place during the time that they've had the devil level captured? Shouldn't he have said something like, well, you know, I was wondering why a lot of things that used to bedevil the world no longer are because the devil's out of the picture. So there's a lot going on here behind the scenes, but I think to really enjoy this episode, you gotta throw all that out the window and just watch it for what it is. For the atmosphere and for the creepiness of it all, once you start going behind the scenes, which is something I love to do, it starts to kind of fall apart. It's a good episode, but I, like everybody else, I couldn't possibly really give it a 5 because there's just too many problems. I just want to say also about John Carradine, who could possibly be better? You know, I mean, talk about a voice, an amazing career. He was in many things that he acted in, kind of hammy, though. And everybody said that about him. And in fact, when I went to IMDb, a couple of interesting things. He actually had the word "ham" in capital letters on his vanity license plate on his Mercedes when he lived in Santa Barbara, California. So he certainly played into that. One of his quotes too, he said, "I've made some of the greatest films ever made, and a lot of crap too." And certainly, this is not one of the crap things that he made. That's for sure. And he died in 1982. By the way, he was 54 years old when he made this episode. He was 54. He looks like he's about 94, but he always had that look, that long, drawn face, and he's got bags under his eyes. He looks absolutely horrible. So, you know,
was great.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
The makeup did in that episode was great.
Well, I agree. And but you have to give it to the voice. It's the voice, I think, that really makes a difference. So that's my view of it. I just think there are problems with it, but it's one of the best episodes of the series. And I would go all the way back. I think of the ones we have done so far on this radio program, as far as having the right person in the right story, this is the first time since all the way back in Time Enough at Last. I mean, you have to have the right actor playing that certain part. And Carradine certainly fits the bill here. It's
Bobby?
Definitely for – yes.
I wanted to ask you a question. Do you feel that this should have been put in the hour setting, like in season 4?
Well, you know what?
Actually,
I was going to say that until you said it first.
Okay.
You stole my thunder on that. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I personally don't like the hour-long episodes with one or two exceptions. But this is – it's ironic that this is the story that should have been there. Yes, it absolutely. I read your review on the message board at our group, and you need to flesh out various things such as how did they manage to catch him? How did they do it? How did they trick him into getting into that cell? What is their background? Where do they come from? Because to tell you the truth, I find them just as creepy as I find the devil. So it's no wonder that I'm going to let them out of the cell, because I find the monks to be a little more terrifying. So yeah, it should have been in the hour long episodes to really flesh it out. When I think of the ones that are in there that just drag on and on and on, this would have been better. It's a good episode. Atmosphere, the director, and John Carradine make it work. Other than that, I would say to anybody who hasn't seen it, take all that do suspension of disbelief like you've never done it before. And you will really, really, really enjoy the story. Okay, that's it for me. Let me turn it over to the real devil in 2010, and that's Ken.
Oh, Bob, don't you know I'm an angel? I'm a very nice angel here. I never cause any trouble on the board, and I'm a radio fool. Ask Lynn. Lynn knows, right, Lynn? Am I not a nice guy?
Yeah, you're right.
But that didn't sound too positive for you, Ken.
Yeah, all right.
I gotta give everybody a weather update. You know, I always do that on the show. You know, since I live in beautiful California here, I gotta give you guys a weather update. It's about 66 degrees and the sun is shining. So for those people who live in the snow and the ice and the rain and the wind and the cold, eat your heart out, because here in California...
Get up.
Better hope the day after tomorrow don't happen there, Ken.
Go ahead, live in the 66-degree weather. I could care less. I love it at 40 and 30.
There you go.
Happy holidays to everybody. I need to ask everybody who's on the radio show, why are we talking about the devil at this time of the year of Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's? Aren't we supposed to be celebrating joy and thankfulness and goodness and peace?
Yes,
peace of will?
We're thankful for the story. It's so great.
And still there's murders and suicides and accidents and tragedy that still goes on in the world.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
now, what'd you think of it, Ken?
Well, I'll have to agree with everybody's comments. The first time you see it, the point is really hits home. And I think what Rod Serling is trying to tell everybody from this story is that you can catch the devil, but you can't keep them locked up. And if the devil does escape from whatever imprisonment or confinement that he's in, if he escapes, he's going to cause havoc. And I guess the point here is that war and destruction is caused by the devil. And if you look over world history, I'll have to agree with that. There must be an evil force in the world causing men to hate each other. I keep thinking of that movie, The Exorcist, where that demon got into the girl, and she was just an evil presence in that room, and no matter what the guys tried to do to get the demon out, they couldn't do it until finally the guy had to grab the girl's throat and cast the demon out, and then the girl is back to normal. I can't believe that men can be so evil in their nature unless a demon or the devil gets into their soul. So that's another discussion. As far as the title, I like the title, The Howling Man. And I need to let everybody know that, you know, the howling, that howling in the episode, the noise?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In the background, that's my relatives who come over and visit me. my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law, my mother-in-law, some of the cousins. That's the howling. Okay? So they were cast in this episode.
They
and,
did a good job.
They must boot you in full moon days there, Ken.
Let's see, what else? It's, the key point of the episode, obviously, is when the guy is let out and he makes that mysterious walk and then he's transformed into the horny, ugly, evil devil. That was the key of the episode. And I took more out of the episode watching that scene than anything, and I said, yikes. He tricked the guy to get out. The devil tricked Ellington to let him out. And now that he's out, what will happen? And that hit home to me. The devil can be a nice guy, apparently, but once you let him out and he's free to do what he wants, then you see the evil nature manifest. And just that scene really made the episode for me, and that's why I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. I won't give it a 5 because the end was a letdown again. You can't do that to me, Rod Serling. I'm going to say it again. If you're going to have a finality to your story and a climax, you can't fall flat. You can't end on a dud. Now, what is the end scene on this one? The housekeeper.
He had a hard worker.
Yeah. Yeah. Ellington tells the housekeeper, do not let this person out. And so the end is, I guess the housekeeper is kind of wandering and thinking and hearing the howling. And apparently she lets him out, right?
Well, they show her opening the door and taking the lock off the door and opening it, yeah.
But we don't see it.
See that part. You see that part. You see her.
Yeah, she
unlatches
the cane. There's like a little. Think of a candy cane.
Okay.
Holding the lock, and
but
you
like
open the door. It's
smaller version
locked.
Of that staff.
Yeah.
That was a, yeah.
But we don't see what comes next, and
no.
It ends right there. So.
That's why I said they needed to flesh this out more, and to make it an hour long, because just when it was going over.
In my review, I put a little alternate ending indicating that in the middle of the story, you know, the character of the monks, a little dragged out there. They could have deleted some of those scenes. And I agree, having the monk look like Moses and Abraham, a little over the top there. But I would have, as soon as Ellington let the devil out and then he has that transformation and he looks real horny and evil, I would just show some kind of like over.
He looks real horny.
Yeah. It's funny. Man's concept of the devil is the horns and I guess the fork and the horny tail and then the redness or the whatever, the dark orange suit. That's man's concept of the devil, but we really don't know what the devil looks like because back in the Garden of Eden, he was a serpent. And I guess in the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus was talking to the devil, I think it was another form. I think it was a serpent again in there. And then other times in history, the devil showed up in different forms. I don't know where man got the horny look from.
Well, look at the different forms he takes in the various Twilight Zone episodes. Big, fat, jolly guy. And,
yeah.
You know, he takes all kinds of different forms.
Yeah.
But what I would do with the alternate scenes, as soon as Ellington lets him out and then he's the horny guy, he's free to roam, show some scenes of maybe World War II destruction and then the devil kind of laughing in the background, ha ha ha, or the Korean War, or show some other evil destruction where man is just killing each other and then the devil is in the background laughing his head off, and this would hit home more, the message would hit that you let the devil out and look what he'll do to mankind and to society and to the world itself.
You mean, in other words, put some stock footage on to lead up to where they go back to him at his age, where he's trying, he got the devil holed up. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
But, and then also have a scene where Ellington recaptures the devil. I mean, come on, Rod, you're leaving that up to our imagination. How did he recapture the devil and lock him up?
Yeah, I can't even imagine how he could do that. I just can't even imagine how you capture a devil.
So I would have used some of those scenes, and maybe if the story is a little bit more polished, written a little bit better, I would have gave it a classic, because you would say, wow, what a story this is. You capture the devil, but the devil will trick you, and if he's let go, look what will happen. And then if he's captured again, and then he'll trick the housekeeper with the howling, the housekeeper will let him out, and look what will happen. And then the message will hit home. And if someone else, you even have to ask yourself, if you had the devil locked up, let's say in the barn on your property, and then he has that howling and he has that calm look, would you let him out? Would you be tricked? And then the consequences, actually Ellington tanked by letting the devil out. Ellington has blood on his hands, because if the devil caused the wars, World War II and the Korean War, and if the devil is killing people, then in one sense, Ellington is at fault. So maybe have a scene there where Ellington has remorse, and that's why he had to go recapture the devil and lock him up. So again, I know it's 23 minutes. Maybe delete some of the slow scenes and really get to the meat. And so that's why I'll give it a 4, excellent rating. Also, one other point I wanted to make. Let's contrast this episode. I agree with the point about the atmosphere. You know, you have the cold, the dark, the forbidding, the castle, the night, the creepiness. And contrast that with the episode The Chaser, where you have that dunce who looks for a love potion so he can kiss that unattractive woman who's just slobbering all over him with drinks in her hand. Compare that episode, The Chaser, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Like night and day, right? Let's say you're watching the Twilight Zone on a marathon, and you're in a lonely hotel, and The Chaser comes on, and you say, good grief, what a mess. And then the next episode is The Howling Man. And then you're in the pouring rain in the middle of nowhere. So contrast these episodes, right? So Rod, I'll give you credit, Rod Serling, that this is what I'm looking for in the Twilight Zone. Give me a story, keep me guessing, and have something to your story. That's all I'm asking. Okay, I think I'm out. Happy holidays, everybody. Be safe. Don't spend too much money.
Well, we will try.
And Lynn, tell me who to throw it over to.
I want to hear what Rick has to say now.
All right. I disagree. I think it's perfect at half an hour, because in horror, you don't have to explain everything. Okay? What is a ghost? It's a ghost. It's a spirit. It's the remains of human beings. It's ectoplasm. Period. End. Okay? What is the staff? The staff of truth. What does that mean? It's the staff of truth. The devil cannot touch it. But why can't he? The devil cannot touch it. Does not need an explanation. This is a horror story. Okay?
Sometimes if you flesh things out too much, it can take away from the story, I think.
Yes, it will drag it on, and you add too many things. And also, have you guys read the short story this is based on by Charles Beaumont,
mm-hmm.
Who wrote the script?
Right.
It's only about 30 pages long, okay, which isn't very long for a script to be. And this is a short story, not a script. The basic thing is that Ken said was, it's easy to catch the devil, but not to keep him. Again, that's why I asked you if you read the short story that Beaumont read, and that was, wrote, and that's the basic gist of the short story.
Okay.
It's easy to catch him, just try holding on to him.
Right, right.
But Rick, I got a question. You know, examples of short stories, like even Stephen King, Salem's Lot was a short story. Trucks was a short story. What's another one of his short stories? Stand By Me is a short story.
Robert,
that's what I'm saying. You can get more information. When I watch a movie, when you watch a 1930 or 40s movie, yes, there are some things that are stretched beyond the story itself. But I feel that this could have worked out with another 30 minutes of fleshing out the central story.
Yeah. Look, I produce and direct a horror direct-to-DVD thing. Like I said, personally, less is more. Okay? Let people use their imagination.
Leave a little mystery about it.
Yeah, you show something, bang, that's it. You cut away to something else. Okay? In one scene in my show, it's called Harrow House, by the way. There's a guy in the basement, which is actually my garage, and he's looking at a pile of sand. All of a sudden, he looks over his shoulder, and you see something moving towards him. Then we cut to a grandfather clock. Okay? What happens is, what happened is left up to you. Okay. I'll also tell you that in the episode I'm describing, there's a woman chased by three slugs, and she goes to the house, Harrow House, and she was actually headed there to begin with. Anyway, one thug is literally eaten by the oven. Another thug is dissolved in the bathtub. So you see those two incidences before you see what happens to the guy in the basement. So that's why we left it like that, of course, sort of. But like I said, you in horror, you really do not need a scientific explanation. All right, Robert, I got one for you. Christine, I love the movie. I love
Me too.
I love the short story. But I think a lot of the stuff in the movie could have been cut out, too.
Well, Carrie, same way. I like Carrie as well. I like the background of Carrie, and we find out about her. Yes, the same situation as you said with Christine. I mean, you know, we can name horror movies that go beyond, you know, the scope of the script itself. But I had to disagree with you. I feel that there are, if you watch, you know, all 56 Twilight Zone episodes,
right,
that there are some that really did need to be fleshed out because you're only working with 22 to 25 minutes. Some of these stories weren't even worth 25 minutes. They were basically worth about 15 minutes, even if that. But, I mean, you know, the one we talk about next week, I feel could be, you know, maybe a little bit not as long as, you know, 25 minutes. That could have been like a 35-minute thing next week's one we're going to talk about. But this one, I felt, could have been fleshed out a little bit better, you know, for another 30 minutes. You know, I would have loved to have seen the background of David. How did he come on that, you know, castle? What motivated him to go there? You know, he's seen the light. What was the formation of the Brotherhood? I would have loved to find out that stuff. But then when we get to the good part, to where it's at the end, then it's like, what? What? And, you know, it's great about the Twilight Zone that some of the episodes do grip you like that. But I just feel that this one should have had some more time to it. This would have been one that would have fit in season 4. But that's just me.
That's just him.
But anyway, also one more thing, as I mentioned, the makeup was excellent.
Yeah.
And they still
yeah.
can't figure out, with all our modern stuff, and I know real big makeup people, even though I'm a low-budget person myself, but I know real big-budgeted makeup people. I go, how the heck did they do that? And I read stories about they had hotter lighting on it, and it melted like a layer away. I go, can we do that today? And they go, no. And that, you know, as he went from pillar to pillar, they had hotter and hotter lighting.
And I thought it was great. They were great effects. I love the way he just metamorphosis.
I always thought that it was edited that way. I thought they'd stop, put more makeup on, say, okay, you came from this column, walk to this column, stop, we put the other. No, it was from one column to another, they had X amount of lights. Or, okay, I'm going to get a little technical. A normal light, which is called a Leco light, it's about 15,000, 20,000 watts, which is pretty damned hot.
Yeah.
Okay? That's just one bulb. Okay? So they must have had, like I said, on one post to post or column to column, they might have had one Leco, and it melted off, say, the first layer. The next one, they must have had two or three, melted off the next layer. I'm just guessing because I wasn't, well, I was alive back then, but I was all, what, maybe two? you know, I wasn't in the business back then. But I thought that was amazing, and I read stories of how they did it. Nobody can, you know, we all just sit around sometimes at the set. We just sit around. How could they do that without CGI? How could they do that without this? You know, and they did. And they did a great job. And
I
agree. I think it was a great way of them doing the special effects, and that's why I enjoy on DVDs going to special features after watching the show, or sometimes if I've already seen the movie, go to it first just to see how the makeup and everything was done, camera shots and stuff. So yeah,
exactly, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So anyway, my rating is a 5. Told you I'd disagree with you all.
You're not far off, though. I mean, we all rated it excellent. I think it was one. It's one of my favorites. Absolutely one of my favorites.
And like I said, you know, Twilight Zone was more than just a science fiction thing. He also had, you know, he also expected horror shows. But he, Rod Serling himself, and I've said this many times and I'll say it again, thought of it, especially the stuff he wrote himself, as a morality play rather than science fiction, horror, or whatnot.
Right.
Hi all, this is Dave AC. Let me just give you my thoughts on the episode 41 of Series 2, The Howling Man. Well, I believe it was actually the first episode in Series 2 that wasn't written by Rod Serling, but in fact by Charles Beaumont, and it certainly does have a different look and feel about the whole episode. For me, it scores a point for having the great John Carradine as playing a brother Jerome in it. But let's go back to the beginning of the story, where in actual fact we've got a story being told within the story, because the man himself is recounting, as we find out later, to his housekeeper why she shouldn't undo the door, which is unbelievably fastened with just a small crook. We don't see that, of course, at the beginning. All we see is a close-up of the actor's face, and he recounts the story of when, after the First World War, he's wandering in Europe, and he gets lost in the storm and arrives at this very, very strange hermitage or monastery place, whatever. He then gets accosted by this, well, he hears the howling sound, goes to investigate, and seems to find this falsely imprisoned person who seems very plausible. And of course, to us in the modern world, these people seem to be so out of touch that we can quite believe the prisoner that he is actually being falsely detained. We then hear Brother Jerome confess that they are keeping this person, but that there is a reason for this, that the person in the room is actually the incarnation of the devil. And of course, the main character now has this dilemma of who should he believe. With quite an exciting reveal, he does indeed let loose this man, who then, through a series of reveals, becomes or shows himself to be the devil. We then cut back quite quickly to the telling of the story by this man to his housekeeper as to why she should ignore any howling sounds and should not on any account open the door. She does, of course, open the door, and that is where the whole Rod Sterling steps in to say that, you know, we can contain the devil for some time, but it's never going to be contained forever. So what do I think of the story? Well, in a way, there were no surprises whatsoever, but it was nicely told. It was a completely different pace and feel and look to many of the episodes that we've seen before this. And of course, I do like John Carradine in his sort of cameo role there as Brother Jerome. So it's not an outstanding episode, but I did like it. I did feel as though it moved the boundaries of the Twilight Zone into a different look and feel, and for that I would probably give it 2, 2.5. I know I seem by some of the people on the Twilight Zone group to be sort of quite generous with my marking, but I do feel as though I should mark these things as and when they were aired. This one apparently aired November 4, 1960, so it's 50 years old, and it still is a watchable episode. And for that reason alone, it deserves some recognition. And I think that's about it. So back to the rest of the group. Thanks all. Bye.
Well, the nice thing is that, you know, we have ups and downs with Twilight Zone, and we're getting to an up mode situation right now. So, yeah,
absolutely.
This is one of the ones I really enjoyed.
Absolutely.
Compared to the other ones.
Yeah, definitely one of the favorites. Okay, well, I think unless anybody has anything to add, I think we pretty much talked about this one as much as we can. But in 2 weeks, we are coming up on another classic, The Eye of the Beholder. And I think everybody's pretty excited about that one. And again, another favorite of most Twilight Zone aficionados.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Definitely. So that one will be in 2 weeks on Saturday, December 11th, I believe. Yeah, Saturday, December 11th. So we will be doing Eye of the Beholder. So hopefully everyone, again, can join us for that. And I want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving holiday. And, of course, we're coming up on Christmas pretty soon, but we're not there yet. So everybody just enjoy the rest of their weekend. And thanks for being here today and adding all of your great insight. And we'll see you in 2 weeks, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Take care, everybody. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.